From SiriusXM's Doctor Radio, this is Coronavirus, everything you need to know now.
We are back. I'm Dr. Michael Aronoff. You are listening to The Psychiatry Show. Should we take some sort of comfort in the fact that there also seems to be, although the infectivity has increased, the lethality doesn't seem to be increased?
Yeah, and I think there's three reasons for that, two good and one not so good. The first one is that, good in a way, the first one is that younger people are getting infected, and that's driving some of the numbers right now, and they tend not to get quite as ill as older. And of course, there are exceptions, right? We've all seen the cases of the 18-year-old who goes into the ICU and dies. So that can happen, but they're generally younger. The second thing is, thanks in large part to the efforts of people in Manhattan and New York, we learned a lot about how to treat this virus when people get really sick and keep people alive and get them out of the hospital. So that's great news, and we're sharing information widely on how to best treat this. But still, those people are sick, and they're in the hospital for quite a long time, and then they're just recovering at a better rate. And finally, and this is the bad news, deaths tend to lag about 3 weeks to 4 weeks after the case is reported.
Yeah, that's important.
So brace yourself for the 1st of August.
Right, right. You are listening to Dr. Michael Sagg. He's my guest on the phone, my return guest on the phone. Just go to the email from Katie in Maryland. I read that the U.S. government will pay $1.6 billion to Novavax in the Warp Speed program for a vaccine. You have a reaction to that, Michael?
Yeah, it's necessary. Dr. Fauci has said this many times. The bottom line is the sort of quiet hope that we all have is that a vaccine will come and rescue us. And the earliest I think that could possibly happen is this January, where we might see evidence that it works. That's a bit of a long shot, but let's say it happens. Well, then we have the challenge of, okay, you have it work, but how do you scale up manufacturing? And so if we did this sequentially, where we did a study, we did another study, and a third study showed it worked, and now we're in January 21, now we got to get production set up. So you got to build factories, and you got to build all of the standard that the FDA requires. Well, that could be another year. So what they're doing is they're spending money now to build capacity in the case that the vaccine works, so that come January, if it's shown to be working, we will end up with a vaccine that can be distributed widely within 4 months, 6 months after it's shown to work. Because you can imagine the frustration, right? If you see, oh, the vaccine worked. Well, how do I get it? Well, we won't have it for a year. What?
Of course.
So that's what the $1.6 billion is for. The approach for this vaccine development is being largely scientifically based on something called an mRNA vaccine. That's genetic material as the vaccine product. And that's very different. We've never done that before. So that is viewed as the best approach by a lot of people to develop a successful vaccine. And so it's easier to manufacture. It's easier. It actually seems to be working in the preliminary studies. But that also means that new startup companies will be involved. And a lot of people will be helping them if they have a successful product. That's for sure.
Yeah. You'll pardon my expression, but it's worth a shot, right?
Yeah, it's worth a shot. Hamilton's now out, so we'll quote that liberally.
Right. Let's go to the phones to Lisa in New York.
I was wondering if you know, are you more contagious if you are symptomatic with the virus versus if you test positive but have no symptoms? Are you more contagious?
It's a question about who's more infectious, asymptomatic person or someone with symptoms. The bottom line answer is we don't really know. The best guess is that people in that 24-hour period before they develop symptoms, those who have symptoms, that's when the most infectivity is there. And then that infectivity lasts, on average, for about 5 to 7 days and then diminishes. The asymptomatics, we just don't know, because we only discover them usually by random testing or something called sentinel testing. And when we do find them testing positive, we don't know exactly when they got infected. And we don't know completely when they're going to clear it, and during that time how much they are infectious. So we do know for sure, though, that anyone who's asymptomatic and has it does indeed spread the virus. That's been seen in the young people in the bar scenes. You've heard about those stories. So that's the challenge, and that's why we should treat everyone as if they're infected. Everyone should assume they're infected, and that's why mask wearing is so important, because if somebody is infected and they're wearing a mask, the mask contains the virus more to a much smaller radius around them and reduces the spread.
Let me ask you something. Are we still in the first wave, in quotes?
Yes. We're not only in the first wave, we're still very early in this epidemic, and that's a sobering thought, isn't it?
That, it sure is.
We sure want to. We thought most things would just kind of, hunker down, bear through it, and then it goes away like a bad storm. This storm is just getting started, I'm afraid, and I think it's highly likely. I think we should assume that our current situation will be with us this time next year. That's a hard thing. That's a hard pill to swallow. But I don't see any evidence that it's going to go away just by magic. And a vaccine will help, but we won't, as we just talked about, we won't have that in our hand the earliest in a large scale until a year from now. So we've got to adapt to this new normal. And that's a pretty heavy lift for all of us, and does, to your point of this show, take a big a psychological toll on people.
Yeah. What should people know about testing, the testing sites now, antibody tests popping up all over the place? Are they reliable? Are they accurate? Are they valid?
Yeah, it's variable. The thing to keep in mind is we're obviously very early in this epidemic, so all the tests that are being developed have good intention, but they aren't fully developed in terms of their evaluations. And so they're getting out into the public domain rapidly to help increase capacity, but the price that we're all paying for that is that they're not well described. So let me just take a second and go through the three different types of tests. The first is the immediate test, which is a viral, which we call PCR test, and it's the gold standard. It's only positive when people are infected and actively have virus in their nose or mouth, and you detect it that way.
It detects the virus.
Yeah, that's just detecting the virus. The second test is an antigen test, also designed to detect for the virus, but this time it's looking for the protein product instead of the genetic product. But the thing to remember about an antigen test, it's much faster. You can get an answer within 15 minutes. The problem is it's about only 85% as good as the PCR test. So you're going to miss some people, especially asymptomatics who have it, and they may get by as a negative test that's inaccurate. The antibody test is a whole different concept, and that's looking for the immune system response to the virus. In other words, when our bodies respond to the virus, it produces antibody. And that antibody starts to appear about day 10 after infection and peaks about day 20 to 30. And so when you test and the test is truly positive, what it means is that you've had the infection and you probably by that point have cleared it. Good news, sometimes those are people who are asymptomatic. Bad news, well, the test can be wrong a fair amount, and especially when you're testing large populations of people who maybe didn't have a good reason to have it, the test can be wrong as often as right in that population. So that one is one that I don't think is quite ready for prime time in the way that some of these other tests are.
Mm-hmm. Michael, I want to ask you a more general sort of philosophical question. That is, how does science present itself and move forward? You said in response to a question, we don't know yet. Well, people get impatient. Uncertainty, riles us up. And the question is, how should we think about progress in learning about the virus? You have some thoughts about that you can share with us?
Yeah, I do. Scientists, what matters to science is truth, true truth, absolute truth. And most often, those truths are revealed to us incrementally. And sometimes we're misled by the nature of an experiment and its flaws, or maybe it didn't quite work the way we want. So we're getting bits of data, we compile it, we try to confirm it, and then we try to end up constructing the story of the truth as it relates to any particular situation. And in fact, you think about it, the best way that all of us have seen this is when somebody gets admitted to the hospital with an illness. The providers are trying to figure out what the truth is, what's causing the illness, and they run a bunch of tests. Some of them are misleading, some of them are accurate, but you've got to keep working through that till you get to the answer. Like the story you just told about Lyme disease, initially it was thought to be COVID, found not to be the truth. Same thing's true in science. So the problem I think that the general public is struggling with is that scientists, as a rule, are going to be honest in their dealings with questions. Like, they'll say, I don't know, or they'll say, we're not sure. And sometimes that's unnerving, right, to the public, yes, because they'll say, well, they don't know what they're talking about. Actually, I'd gain a lot of confidence in somebody who says, honestly, I don't know, or we don't know, because that's the truth. Right. And the other thing I'll say quickly is that science has done us a great service in this epidemic. When we compare it, for example, to AIDS, we just heard about AIDS in 1981. The virus wasn't even discovered till 1983. A test wasn't available till 1985, and a treatment not until 1987-88. So in this case, we just heard about this in late December at the earliest. We had the virus identified and its structure known by the middle of January, had a vaccine candidate 2 days after that, and had a treatment identified and available by early May. And then we have the testing available in February and then increasing for this time. That's remarkable. I think we should celebrate the science, but we also don't know the whole story right now. So we're learning as we go.
Get facts, not fear, from SiriusXM's Doctor Radio, presented by the leading experts from NYU Langone Health. To learn more about Doctor Radio, including shows and schedules, go to SiriusXM.com/Doctor Radio.